Welcome to the Western Canadian Animal Health Network's Veterinary Podcast. This podcast is intended to share information about animal health and infectious disease risks with veterinarians and producers in Western Canada. In this episode, we'll be discussing some important considerations for mixed or other species veterinarians who might be providing veterinary care for the increasing number of small-scale or backyard swine herds. My name is Dr. Kate Todd. I'm a veterinarian, and today I'll be speaking with Dr. Jessica Law, a swine veterinarian who works out of Prairie Swine Health Services in Alberta. Dr. Law joined Prairie Swine Health Services after graduation to pursue production animal medicine, and in practice, she enjoys working to improve herd health and performance through preventative herd health programs, reproduction, biosecurity, welfare assessments, as well as disease investigations. Dr. Law is currently serving as the president of both the Western Canadian Association of Swine Veterinarians and the Canadian Association of Swine Veterinarians. In 2018, Dr. Law received the Rising Star Award at the Alberta Pork Congress, and she received the Young Veterinarian of the Year Award from the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Law. Why do you think we're seeing more people deciding to get into small-scale swine production or to raise some backyard pigs? Is this a trend from the pandemic, or did it start before this?
That's a great question. I think for sure we're seeing some more interest as a result of the pandemic with people being at home, especially people who have access to enough room or space, as well as possibly some acreages where they can possibly house pigs. However, the trend of increasing small-scale producers and backyard livestock has been on an upward trend for a few years now. Possibly even more, maybe up to 10 years. We are definitely seeing it in the Western provinces at a higher rate. So in BC, they have a large majority of the small scale producers. And it's definitely been the case where in the past, we used to talk about how there are fewer farms and these farms are getting much larger. And this continues to happen in commercial farms. We're continuing to see this amalgamation. However, in the last few years, we've been seeing way more people decide that they want to raise their own food or get involved with agriculture in their own way, especially if they have the means to do so.
So can you describe some of the types of swine herds that might fall into this category of small-scale production? I understand there can be a lot of variety in herd type and in structure.
Yeah, so essentially the definition will vary based off of who you're consulting on this. I can't say in our swine practice we have a specific definition, but essentially we're looking at anywhere from, say, 2 or 5 to less than 1,000 pigs is what we consider a small holder. And this is really based off of the fact that finishing barns, which is where commercial producers will raise their pigs from about 12 weeks of age and up until slaughter, they have usually around 2,000 pigs. So that's basically the smallest type of farm that you're going to get in a commercial setting. And anything less than this is going to be considered a smallholder. I've worked with a number of different producers in that would be considered backyard or small-scale farming. And so some of these are owning unique breeds, such as Kuni Kunis or Mangalitsas, which provide a specific type of meat that's unique with sort of different fat content, and they fulfill a niche market. But there's also producers that are just purchasing commercial pork breeds, and they're just raising them outside after they are either weaned or they hit the grower stage, which is about 8 weeks of age. The average farm size is varying from 5 to 150 pigs, and some of these herds are only growing operations, so they purchase their pigs around the grower stage, similar to what a finishing site would do in a commercial setting. So 8 to 12 weeks of age, they buy their pigs and they raise them until slaughter. But other producers are going to breed their own sows and raise the piglets from birth. And some of these farms are 100% outside. Those are typically the ones that only have grower pigs. But the ones that own sows and on boars that are producing piglets and raising them from birth, they're going to have some form of indoor shelter in Alberta, specifically just because of the environment and what we deal with in the winter, that's just really not suited for these little piglets that hit the ground at 1 kilogram.
The medical needs of these small herds must have a lot of variety as well. With the veterinary care for these smaller scale swine operations, is it quite different from the type of work you do in commercial swine production?
So it's really interesting how similar it is from my standpoint as a herd health veterinarian. So I tend to work in mostly focus on the preventative side of their health. And in pigs, this is similar across the board, whether you're working with a commercial herd or a small holder. I work on preventative herd vaccination, acclimation, quarantines, and of course, biosecurity. All words that, as you get into pigs, become run-of-the-mill and very commonplace when you're talking about herd health. That being said, the value of the animals can be significantly higher, whether they're breeding stock or if the owners have an increased value as a result of the animal being closer to a family pet. So when the animal has a higher value to the owner, the procedures and the expense that the owner is willing to go to is a lot higher. They're willing to pay more to save that animal or to treat that animal. In a commercial farm, we're unable to intervene in certain situations where we used to, such as C-sections, prolapse repairs, where veterinarians used to be called out to repair these. But at this point in time, based off the way that the market is and how the industry is run, these animals are no longer worth a value that the producers, not that they don't want to, but that they can afford to have a veterinarian come out and actually repair these things or perform the C-section. However, in a small scale setting, the owners are more willing to pay for a C-section or a prolapse repair in a cell that they're probably going to keep for upwards of 4 to 5 years, who may have a litter for them each year. And that value that they place on that animal is going to be a lot higher than if that animal was in a commercial herd setting. So having a veterinarian available and nearby to do this work is not always feasible or possible. And that's where the overall cost of the procedure will often surpass the value of the animal in both small and large scale production. So having a relationship with a veterinarian that can perform these procedures for you is really critical in small scale production, because the producers are going to want to do that. And in my case, I don't actually have the means to do so. So this is something that we often have to work through as a team before we ever get into these situations.
So that kind of leads into my next question, which is why these smaller scale producers generally look to other types of veterinarians, like a mixed animal practice, for example, for medical care for their pigs. Do you think it's possible that people with one or two pigs might seek out care from veterinarians outside of mixed or food animal practice? For example, an equine vet or even a small animal veterinarian?
I think it would be great if producers would look to or could look to a veterinarian that they may already have a really good relationship with to support them with their pigs. However, I don't think we learn a lot about pigs in vet school that makes, or at least we don't learn enough to make it a comfortable situation that we want to put ourselves into. And it makes it quite daunting to broach these subjects or to broach these adventures with the producer. And so I think a lot of veterinarians, when they get the question about the pig, they're kind of standoffish. They maybe don't want to engage in that, and they often refer. So I personally wouldn't be comfortable treating someone's hamster, and so I would redirect or refer. However, with pig owners, they will find that they're being redirected over and over and never actually coming to a solution, and they get quite frustrated. Recently, I had a joint consult with a producer and their mixed animal practitioner. It was fantastic, and I'm really hoping I can do more of this and that our team can do more of this. I'm incredibly keen to provide consultations to practitioners that are interested in helping out the producers or the owners that have approached them about their pigs. And I think there's more and more veterinarians that are realizing there are resources out there for them. And so even though typically you've only treated equine, or possibly you're even a small animal vet that is getting a lot more pigs in that are pets, having the ability to consult with a swine specific practitioner can be helpful to allow for that support that is often needed in a situation where the experience is going to take some time to build up. So if I can consult with more veterinarians, that will allow for the producer to have access to emergency services or day-to-day services that will help them, I think that we can make a lot more impact in supporting the producers.
That opportunity for a consult actually sounds really intriguing. I think that would be a fantastic option to have in place. And honestly, I've never even thought of that, even though it's quite common that I would consider a consultation with a radiologist or a cardiologist or, you know, an anesthesiologist for a difficult case. So I think that's a great opportunity and something that might be helpful in multiple provinces for sure across Western Canada. I imagine that it's going to be quite challenging for veterinarians to manage health and to treat swine diseases really in such a wide variety of housing and farm settings. What general health principles would you recommend veterinarians discuss as part of their initial farm calls with these clients?
It can definitely be difficult when going to some of these sites. There can be a lot of red herrings. So I would start with the basics such as feed, environment, and housing, and definitely don't get down into the weeds too early. Once you've gotten through the basics such as feed, environment, and housing, you can get an idea of what vaccinations they have in those animals, which animals have received vaccinations and when, and then where did the animals come from? Do you have any herd health history on those farms where they received their animals from? And then if there have been any new introductions. Going after this from an infectious disease standpoint is really important. So infectious disease plays a much larger role in swine health than in other species in terms of what I know. And so this is often the basis of our investigations. This isn't helping you find your answers, then digging deeper and consulting with another specialist may be necessary. But really starting off with the general vaccination protocols, feed, as well as environment and housing, those are going to be the areas where just using basic principles from other species and drawing upon your experience can be really useful. Sometimes I tell veterinarians to treat, depending on whether they're treating an individual animal or a herd. So with an individual, I tell them to treat it like a dog. And then from a herd health standpoint, I tell them to treat it like a cow. And so whether that's just a result of my lack of experience with dogs and cows, I'm not sure, but essentially this is how I draw parallels because I do believe that there's a lot of similarities and that pigs aren't as daunting as we often think they are.
So you mentioned infectious diseases as part of this. What types of diseases might we be presented with in these smaller scale settings as far as infectious disease goes? Would certain diseases be more common on farms where there might be kind of different housing, pasture, or biosecurity protocols? Is there anything you think we should brush up on as we prepare to support these smallholder clients?
I think every veterinarian has at least heard or learned about erysipelas. And this is a disease that is sort of what we consider an old disease. It's not too common anymore in commercial herds, but it's definitely one to have on your differential list when working with a small-scale production site or a small-scale owner. It causes lameness, sudden death, and then what we remember as the diamond skin lesion. And the vaccine is really effective, and so I consider it one of my core vaccines for pigs. And it's something that I would say is one of the top diseases that veterinarians should keep in mind when they're working with these owners. So porcine circovirus type 2 is also very common, and it's one of the most commonly vaccinated for diseases in the world. This is essential for the herd to be vaccinated for this, as the virus can cause poor doing pigs, as well as post-weaning diarrhea, sudden death, and higher incidence of secondary infections. And if you don't vaccinate for this virus, it's unfortunate because you can't actually treat it. Iron deficiency is another one as well. Ensuring the clients understand that all pigs need iron, regardless of whether they're on dirt or not, is critical. I think there's a lot of misconception that if they have access to the outside, they'll get their iron and they'll be just fine. But that's not the case. And especially if they're depending on the housing, they could have limited access to iron sources. So giving iron within 2 to 3 days of birth is really critical. Other diseases involve ascarids. So taking a look at deworming protocols, Streptococcus suis, E. coli, and coccidiosis. These are where I would start. And then getting into mycotoxins, ergot, different toxicities and deficiencies, those are different things that you should have at least reference materials to help you out in situations that don't fit the clinical picture of, say, a typical disease. But I can't say that I personally would be able to point out a toxicity or deficiency right off the bat, I have to go back to my reference materials personally. And so this is something that can be overwhelming if you think that you have to know this in order to work with pigs. And I would say for sure that's not the case. I think just having a veterinarian that's willing to listen and willing to go back and get some information for the producer is something that the producers will absolutely appreciate.
That brings back a lot of memories of my swine diseases chart that I recall from veterinary school. I feel like it actually would be quite helpful if I were getting into assisting some of these smaller scale producers. I know for many of these smaller scale farms, it can be a really difficult financial decision to call out a vet to look at a sick or a painful animal. You've already mentioned that the costs of veterinary diagnostics and treatment may go beyond the dollar value of that individual animal on the market. And I think this can lead to some reluctance to seek veterinary care and then potentially lack of treatment for a sick or injured animal, and then poor animal welfare may result. How can veterinarians encourage small-scale swine clients to establish a veterinary client-patient relationship and to ensure that we're diagnosing and treating these backyard pigs appropriately, both to ensure good individual animal and herd health?
That's a really great question. And unfortunately, something that we run into on a unfortunately frequent basis. One of our largest clients that we acquired quite a few years ago was actually a result of a SPCA call. And so this was before they had gotten going and they were really just getting some experience, but they didn't have a vet off the bat. And so the biggest bang for your buck is going to be starting with a veterinarian from the beginning. A herd health consult to establish a vaccine protocol, biosecurity protocols, incoming animal protocols, and purchasing vaccines is a heck of a lot cheaper than backtracking and realizing 3 months down the road that your pigs aren't growing and actually have PCV2 or porcine circovirus, and they're failing to thrive and will never make it to market weight. So essentially your investment is completely out the door and there's nothing you can do about it. I had a case a few months ago where the client had an erysipelas break. So her pigs had diamond skin lesions and she was very certain it was erysipelas. But then as we got to talking, it turned out that she also had periweaning failure to thrive syndrome, which is a result of PCV2. She had purchased from an unverified source and was out quite a bit of money in the end. So sharing experiences like this is not to scare clients, but to help them understand the golden rule of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so it can be incredibly helpful to start with a veterinarian and get this stuff down immediately. Getting to know the people selling the pigs that you're buying, as well as working with them, is going to be helpful for those producers, but also for the veterinarians. So as a veterinarian that works with some of these backyard or small scale producers, I work really closely with the breeders that sell the breeding stock. And that's actually not as a result of me seeking them out. It's kind of was a result of luck, but I would recommend that practitioners that are trying to work with backyard producers or small scale holders actually go seek out those that are selling the animals. Whether this is a commercial farm that's selling some growing stock or it's a farm that's actually selling breeding stock. Because as you know from small animal practice, people call their breeders. They call their breeders for more information. And if you have a good relationship with those breeders or those sellers, it's a really easy way to allow for information that is valid and useful to the producers as well as useful for you as a veterinarian to be disseminated on an effective basis.
That's a really proactive approach. I like it. I know the thought makes me a bit nervous about working with breeders just because of some of the particularities that can occur there. But you're right, that would be a really great way to get information to new smaller scale operations so that maybe they could establish that VCPR a bit earlier, which I think would be helpful for everyone. On the other side of the coin, I think we might also see that some of these smaller scale producers, they may be more likely actually to seek medical treatment for an individual pig with an injury or an individual pig that is ADR. Are there disease conditions that veterinarians may be more likely to treat because of this focus on the individual pig versus herd health?
Yeah, so in the case of individual pig versus herd health, there have been cases of urinary stones, abdominal masses, hernias, and ear infections, basically anything you can think of when it comes to a pig and their possible disease conditions that they could have that aren't necessarily linked to an infectious disease, or maybe they are and it's a chronic condition. And these are all better treated by a practitioner that has the equipment and facilities to provide supportive care to individual patients. And so as a swine practitioner, I don't have the capacity for this. I don't have a surgical suite, and fixing a hernia isn't something I do on a regular basis. My producers aren't going to call me out to do one pig. However, a small-scale producer who only has 10 pigs may ask that the one pig with a hernia gets prepared by the veterinarian, and they're willing to pay $200+ for this because that animal is 10% of their herd, and it's a cost that they're willing to accept. And they're not willing to euthanize an animal just because of a inguinal or abdominal hernia. So in these situations, I like to essentially let the practitioners know that it's really no different than treating any other species in an individual animal manner. Your pre-med might be a bit different, and your sedation protocols or anesthesia protocols may have to be adjusted. But essentially, if there are cases of small-scale producers wanting to seek medical treatment for an individual pig with an injury or one of these other conditions, I think it's worthwhile for that producer to do so. And hopefully we can sort of congregate enough veterinarians that are willing to do that, that we can support the producers that are interested in this.
So as in any type of vet work, we may be presented with a herd of sick pigs or a sick individual pig and need to do some diagnostic testing. What are the first diagnostic samples that you collect when you're working up, let's say, a bit of a mystery case of, you know, sick pigs?
A lot of the diagnostic protocols developed in swine medicine are for herd level diseases, and we want to collect a lot of samples so that we have sort of repeated results. And so a lot of these samples are from pigs post-mortem. However, with individual or smaller herds, videos and farm visits are really essential so that we don't have to euthanize those animals. For sure, I'm on farm doing the postmortem, so I see the pigs before I either euthanize for samples or collect samples from something that has already passed away. But essentially, getting a video or doing the farm visit is going to be essential because it's highly likely that the animal has not died or will not die, and the owner is trying to save them. So even experienced producers can describe conditions in a way where it sounds like something totally different. So having a visual as well as being present with the animal is going to be really helpful. From there, you can review whether you want nasal swabs or oral pharyngeal swabs for respiratory diseases, such as influenza, mycoplasma, or maybe you're going to collect blood samples for a CBC chem or look at a PCR for porcine circovirus or porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome. In a diarrhea case, histology is usually incredibly helpful, but in the event that you don't have animals that are dying as a result of the diarrhea or that you can sacrifice, fresh fecal samples can often get you most of the way to the diagnosis. And then I would just go from the basics. So essentially starting from the system that's affected, go through your differentials, and then start using that to guide your sample collection based on the samples that you think will be most useful to rule out or rule in the most diseases at once. So whether that's a blood sample or a nasal swab or a rope that you put in a pen of pigs and let them chew on and then squeeze it out for oral fluids, those are the sort of things that I would start with. So non-invasive sampling that can cover your basis on a couple different diseases.
And could you maybe talk a bit about when you might pool samples and what type of samples you might choose to pool from a herd?
Pooling tends to happen when we have a sampling situation where we have a lot of animals and the likelihood of finding the disease or having a positive result in multiple animals is high. So say we have a porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome situation, and that's sort of our highest differential, and we have a herd of, say, maybe there's 100 pigs and they're in three different pens, we could put ropes into each of those pens and allow them to chew on them. And if cost is an issue, we could pool those all if there's symptoms in each pen and we think that we just want to rule out or rule in the disease, we could pool those ropes. You can also pool blood samples for PCR. So we could also go into those pens and collect, say, 10 blood samples, and we could pool those by 5. So there's a couple different rules for pooling samples in terms of how many you can pool and based off of what type of sample. So blood samples, we tend to pool by 5 for PCRs. ELISAs are done individually because we want that information on an individual basis. And then for oral fluids, we can pool them, but because we usually only take sort of 2 to 5, we usually don't. However, you can consult with the lab and they will ask you what the incidence of the disease is and they will give you some recommendations on pooling. And then for other samples that we've taken before, there's a new sampling type called processing fluids. And so when you castrate the piglets at birth or at processing time, you can collect their testicles and their tails into a bag and then sort of squeeze out the fluid. And then you can test that for PCV2 as well as porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome virus. And then that is done by PCR. There's a lot of opportunities for pooling. You can also pool tissues. It depends on the lab whether they'll allow you to pool tissues. But for the most part, I'd say pooling your blood samples by 5 for PCRs, as well as you can pool oral fluids if you have enough that you want to reduce cost for the producer.
Thanks, Jessica. I think that'll be really helpful. I wanted to touch a bit on layperson terms for different swine diseases. Are there some common layperson terms we should know when we're going out to pig farms? Because I've heard a few that are pretty interesting, and honestly, I did not know what disease they went along with.
There are for sure a few. So starting from like the basics, so a gilt is the equivalent of a heifer, so a female pig that has not had a litter of piglets yet. A barrow is a castrated male pig, and then boar and sow are pretty straightforward. Scours is a term for diarrhea. Rupture can be used to describe a hernia, whether it's an inguinal or a umbilical hernia. And then the great thing about some of these terms is they're specific to large farms. Small scale producers may not use them as frequently, but as you mentioned, you've heard them before for different diseases. So some other ones are like glassers is a term for Haemophilus parasuis, which is being renamed to Glassarella parasuis at the moment. In terms of identification of pigs, a weaner is a pig post-weaning and a suckling pig is still on the sow. A grower is a pig around 8 to 12 weeks of age or older. And then a finisher pig is 14 to 16 weeks. That's near to slaughter weight or age. And I get into difficult situations sometimes where I'm using too much terminology from large scale producers that my small scale producers get confused. So I can for sure identify with some of these lay terms that get confusing. Were there any others that you had heard?
I think there was one. I tried to look it up to find it again, but I could not. I think there was one similar to kinky back in chickens. It was referring to a very painful or down pig, I think. Something that sounded maybe neurological or lameness related.
Was it dippity pig syndrome?
Yes, dippity pig.
Dippity pig syndrome is actually a disease. So it's caused by a bacteria that causes like a rash or a really painful skin lesion on their back. So they kind of arch their back almost. There's also humpback, which is kyphosis. So the spine is actually abnormal and they look like they have, it's almost the opposite of dippity pig where their back hunches up. But yeah, there's a lot of those weird terms.
That is definitely my favorite disease of the day. That's going to be a good one. And I'll probably even go to look it up. So what kind of resources are out there for veterinarians who do want to look up certain swine veterinary conditions or brush up just on their swine vet medicine in general? Are there any organizations or CE events that you would recommend that might be appropriate for someone who's just getting back into this or wanting to improve their swine medicine?
There are a lot of resources right now, especially because of the pandemic. The Western Canadian Association of Swine Veterinarians is an association I would definitely recommend. They put on an amazing conference in the fall, and in the meantime, they're doing webinars for both members and non-members. All this info is on the website at wcasv.ca. National Hog Farmer, Pig 333, and Pig Progress are all doing webinars and seminars lately. These are usually free. You just have to sign up and give your email so they can send you more emails. And this is great for producers as well as veterinarians. The old Canadian Swine Health Board biosecurity videos are also very useful. They do need some adjustments for small scale producers, but the new Canadian Pork Excellence Program is updating these and will be coming out with some more in the future. They also have a bunch of fact sheets in their resource materials, and that's on the Canadian Pork Council website. And this is like fact sheets on things like toxoplasmosis, as well as controlling your site for preventing like rodents and wild animals, which is important for people who are trying to get certified on the Canadian Pork Excellence Program, which means they're exporting out of Canada or slaughtering at a federal facility. But they have a lot of resources and fact sheets in the actual program materials, which are useful for people who even aren't on the program. The Diseases of Swine and Pig Health are great textbooks that I use very frequently. Pig Health has a ton of pictures as well as videos and sound bites online that you can access. BC Pork has a great small lot producer pork production manual, and this is for producers but could also be valuable to veterinarians working with smallholders. And AASV is a great resource that provides access to their journal, and the CVJ, Canadian Veterinary Journal through the CVMA, often has swine-related articles every so often. So if you're receiving the CVJ already, you can look out for those.
Thanks very much, Dr. Law, for chatting with me today about this little niche corner of veterinary medicine. And thanks for sharing your perspectives from swine practice. I think this will be really valuable for a lot of veterinarians. If you're a veterinarian in Western Canada and you are providing veterinary care for some small-scale swine herds, please also email us at the Western Canadian Animal Health Network so that you can be added to the email listserv that we are developing to discuss your clinical case questions with swine expert veterinarians, who may include Dr. Law herself. Tune in next time also for a discussion with Dr. Law where we review an important disease threat for swine, African swine fever. Thanks for joining us today.